Welcome back, everyone. This episode is best known for two things. Tasha Yar in her Princess Leia, Slave Leia cosplay, and finding out that Data has a vibrating setting. This is The Naked Now, and boy, is there a lot to judge. Obviously, this is one of those leftover scripts, leftover tangents from the TOS days. So unfortunately, we have to deal with a lot of very questionable sensibilities when it comes to the politics of sex. So it is something that I surely cannot judge alone. Once again, I am Jack Tracy, and you can find me everywhere at OBS, O-B-S, Lounge, S-T, on all the socials. But to help me judge this episode, I have back with me the lifelong Star Trek fan from Los Angeles, California, the director of campaign operations at the HRC, back with me again for a second week in a row, Stanley Williams. Hey, Stanley.
Hoi hoi. Thanks for having me again.
So what amount of sexual trauma did you go through watching this episode again?
Oh, so many memories. No. It was a wild ride. I am hard pressed to watch a lot of the original series, to be completely blunt. And
same.
I almost went back to where this one began, but I just couldn't bring myself to it after watching this one again yesterday.
Yeah, this is, I mean, there are obvious problems that everyone has with it, but I think the bigger problem I have with The Naked Now is that you shouldn't do an episode where your characters are acting out of character if you don't yet know the characters. This is episode 2.
Yeah.
So there's no contrast because we don't know who these people are yet.
Right. I had that in my notes as well. I've heard this thought as well. In a way, it's kind of a bold move to do this with your characters before we know them, but not the best move. And it's definitely not a bold move to take an original series episode and just put it into the new show, especially when you hear that a lot of the time they were like, we want to do it different. There's a connection to Star Trek, but it needs to be different. And so let's redo one of our episodes as episode 2. Like, no sense.
It's odd because they had so much time, you would think, to put together something new. It's not like they were racing like the handover from TNG to Deep Space Nine, where they basically took a bunch of unused or discount bin TNG scripts and were like, well, Deep Space Nine do these. It wasn't like, I mean, they could have created, they didn't need to rely on anything old. And in fact, it kind of goes against Gene's whole thing of they had to fight to be able to even say the name Spock in the Sarek episode because they did not want to really reference the old show at all. And so to do this, which is simply a reference to the old show, almost entirely a reference to the old show, seems so strange.
Yeah, and they didn't, I feel like we'll get into it with the zhuzhening, but there was no expansion on the idea. It was just the same virus, but the same medicine didn't work. That was the only difference that I recall from the original episode.
So, right.
So what made this one different? Like, how is this one different? There's a lot of opportunities here that they didn't explore.
Right.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, but we certainly will. It's so strange to have an episode like this. Feels like an episode that would have come up during a writer's strike, or we're running out of ideas. For it to be literally the second show, it's just so we were out of ideas by the second show. That's not good.
Yeah. And it like you mentioned, the writer strike, there's obviously currently, for future listeners, there's currently one happening here in the year 2023. Right. And it's hard not to think about the way that production works now. But like you were saying earlier, they had the time to do things differently on the show. They weren't being rushed. And it just feels like they had the time to suss out a lot of, like, I wrote down, there were a lot of weird oddities, like, especially in the dialogue.
Yes.
Geordi's dialogue at the end, like, I have so many things in the brig that I had to condense, but I remember at the end when Picard says Wesley may have something to do with saving the ship, like, no, he literally did, like, come on, like, there's a lot of, and it wasn't even jokey referential, it was just odd, lots of odd things in this episode.
Well, before we dig in, I should be a good podcast host and obviously reference that if you are listening to us, you do have the opportunity to also see us. There is a video version of this podcast on the Patreon at patreon.com/theobservationlounge, where you will get exclusive content, early content, and it's all connected to the Observation Lounge on YouTube, where we have not only videos talking about episodes, but we also have mock-ups of, or how I create my custom action figures. And the reason I bring that up is I have a McDougal, the chief engineer from this episode, the only person on the ship who didn't get too horny to function. So if you need a McDougal in your Playmates line, we have one for you. And yeah, all sorts of fun videos. So hopefully you're over on the YouTube Observation Lounge and you subscribed. You've considered joining the Patreon, and of course you subscribe to this podcast because you're listening to it right now. But let's go into the naked now. So you have surely, if you're listening to this, you've seen this episode. I don't need to do a beat by beat, but generally the crew of the Enterprise is subjected to an exotic illness, I'd say erotic illness, that drives them to unusual manic behavior akin to a type of alcoholic intoxication. And that's all the blurb is, and that's pretty much all there is. So what, Stanley, were the things that, like, your first impressions upon rewatching the episodes, the episode, the thing that stuck out to you, things that you didn't quite remember, things that hit a bit different in 2023? What were your first impressions?
Yeah, this was a wild episode that went in a lot of random different directions. I could see what they were trying to do with some of the character interactions. There were some bold moves, like I said earlier, particularly for the second episode before we know these people. But the execution, I think, was a little off. Some stuff with Geordi, stuff with Tasha. But I do love that we get Badass Beverly, medical mystery solver in episode two. I'll definitely be talking about that more. We get a little bit more of the Troy and Riker. We don't get more of their backstory, but we definitely get more of that they have a backstory. They were playing that a little bit this episode. And the same thing with Picard and Beverly. Like, there is an underlying attraction that we're going to play for this episode and never again until
Allegiance
season. Yeah, like many several seasons later. A long time passes before we get to touch on the Beverly and Picard relationship, which was a shame.
So, to your Riker Troy point, of course, we now have Troy in the bun for the first time. We also have her call him Bill for, Bill, I think, the one and only time he was referred to as Bill. We get, obviously, they had leftover frost machine from Freeze and Tasha. They didn't have to do as many takes, so they used it over on the Tchaikovsky. That was the ship, right? The Tchaikovsky?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had...
Tchaikovsky, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you pronounced the T or not. Who knows? Russians would know.
They froze everybody because they had that special effect on the handy, and that's what they were going to use. Lots of people get frozen in season one. What else jumped out at me? I mean, apparently, the Dr. Crusher audition scene was the horny scene. And she played it for comedy. She thought, oh, this is a comedic role, and got the role because of it, not seeing that that was not mostly going to be what she does on the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I thought was interesting. Preparation. I know Gates McFadden has talked about this on a couple of podcasts and her own. They weren't prepared for her when she came in for her audition. So she was like, they were like, here are the three women you pick. And she picked the comedic scene.
Right. Right.
So great. She plays it well.
She does. I mean, the one thing, having rewatched all of season one recently, one of the biggest things that jumped out to me is how strong Dr. Crusher was in that first season. Mm-hmm. Very, like, probably one of the clearest characters. Because even at the beginning, Data, they didn't really know what Data was. And that's another thing with this one. The fact that this hand wavy, it affects me too. I'm a horny robot. Yep. For hashtag reasons, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, like, they didn't know what he was or what to do with him. And the fact that it affected him at all was, I mean, now knowing, you know, Data today is incredibly stupid.
Yes. Like, how? That's one of my big things is, like, so many things are left unexplained in this episode. We just, that, like you said, it's hand wavy away with so many aspects of it. Like, man, we'll get to episode three and forget it.
Right. Who never gets horny? So it's, I think Riker only towards the very, very, very end.
What I love about this episode, like I said last week, I think Riker being introduced today, if Next Generation was today, he would be stated as pansexual. He would have been probably more overtly sexual. I loved how Jonathan Frakes played this. There was no difference. He was like, this virus is not ready for Riker's already all the time horniness. Like, there's some subtle differences. He's Jonathan Frakes is an excellent actor, but I just love that this virus was no match for William Riker. Bill Riker.
Yeah, horny Bill Riker. Worf never comes down with it.
No, they don't touch him.
It makes Wesley the only teenager that we see on the ship horny for computers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting choice.
That's going to be part of my zhuzhing. The fact that they forgot that there are children on this ship, like, we just don't mention it in this entire episode. My headcanon, which will be part of, I'm skipping ahead, but Beverly, like, the second Geordi leaves, she's like, well, shit, this is getting out there. All civilians are locked down.
Like, right.
You should have seen it.
Yeah. Which they would have done. Yeah. Though today, if you did that, you know, we'd obviously have to have the side of it where, you know, it's their freedom to not, you know, quarantine, and then we can have that whole thing. Actually, I thought of that. I'm rewatching season one of Strange New Worlds to get ready for season two. Yeah. And the episode where they quarantine everybody from the light disease.
Libraries,
Man, like, I saw that and I thought, like, I don't know if they'd be able to do this episode, like, if they put it out today, you get a lot of backlash of, like, well, you can't tell people to quarantine. Like, would people be, you know, they force everybody to quarantine and, like, no one had a problem with that. I don't know.
And then the security chief breaks out really easily. But
of course,
the plot armor of that.
So, yes, I do like Beverly Medical Mystery. But yeah, it because the thing is, they don't say it's not a horny disease. It's an intoxication disease. And the fact that it almost makes more sense for, is it Shimoda? Shimoda and Wesley, where they're just like bumbling.
Yes.
Than it does for the other people where it makes them like DTF.
Yeah. Yeah. But, one thing that I thought was weird was, the Tiakovsk, the Skovsk, I cannot say that other ship's name.
I think it's Tchaikovsky.
The blowing out of their emergency hatch never made any sense to me. Like, you do stupid things when you're drunk, like flying the ship, like somebody takes a shuttle while they're drunk and they hit the nacelle and that causes an explosion, something. Needs to be there for the wrap up, but the emergency hatch blowing out and then everybody was dead, like they skipped so many steps. Like the bridge is supposed to be secure when that thing blow. Like so many little things that I'm like, I go into, there's a lot of headcanon needed to make this episode make any sense whatsoever.
Did you note another thing that jumped out to me? Did you note the callback to this episode in Star Trek Picard?
Remind me.
So when Riker.
Oh, the joke at the end.
No. That I didn't think of that. That there's another one in the second episode where Picard, Riker, and Jack are strategizing what to do. He thinks he can improvise a repulsor beam, which is Wesley's thing.
Nice.
Yeah. Which I thought was, and basically his picking up the asteroid and throwing it was very similar to how they solve this.
Yeah.
Which I thought was probably an unintentional Naked Now reference.
It was good use of the tractor beam has always been inconsistent to me. Like, yeah, it can grab things. Why can't it move them too?
Right. Like, right. Push. I think those were all, and it's the beginning of our rotating chief engineers, because I don't think we had one in Farpoint. So that was new. And yeah, it just seemed, you didn't really get to know very much about the characters. It was silly, it was out of sorts, and it could have played, it still would be a bad episode, but it would have at least played better in the latter half of the season, where you can actually have the comedic of like, oh, these guys are acting weird.
Yeah.
Where this is just like, oh, is this who they are? Is this you don't, yeah, anyway, we've already talked about that.
Especially with Picard and Beverly, I know that they end up dropping that they have something going on, perhaps, but if this episode were later on, to see them after a season of mostly not having that to play with, realizing later in the season, oh, they've been hot for each other. That's right. Something interesting we'll see playing in season two, I'm sure. Oh, no. Beverly's gone for season two.
And honestly, you know, I would love to do, maybe this is a future podcast, but I would love to do a zhuzh of season two where we like take out Pulaski and insert Beverly, and how would the story have been different?
That would be interesting. I want to say for the record, I love Pulaski. Great character, wrong show. She's great, but yes, seeing how Beverly would have been in that season would be interesting. I also like, there are so many multiverse what if scenarios. Once Gates told that story about her audition, it's like, wow, Gates McFadden, Tasha Yar, what would that be like?
Well, and of course, most people know that Marina was cast as Tasha Yar and Denise's, and they switched it after casting, but that would have been a very interesting thing to see as well.
Yeah. What if Denise Crosby stayed, you know? What if the writers were better at writing women characters? What if?
Well, what if is the very nature of this this podcast. So before we get into our wish list of what we would do to zhuzh this episode, let's go through some who has the con, who goes to the brig, to get a sort of sussing out what elements of the story we like and might want to keep versus the things that absolutely have to go. So why don't you, Stanley, give us your first of who has the con in the Naked Now?
Beverly has the con.
Beverly has the con.
As she should, and we'll see it in future seasons, and we'll see it in Picard. She's a badass, put her in control. She solves this medical mystery. Even though she's the one who's like, well, wait a minute, here's what's going on. We need to lock things down. Although it's not stated too much, but then she obviously solves like, okay, this medicine's not working. Let's suss it out some more. And she saves the ship. The Crusher family saves the ship in this episode.
As usual. Yeah. For me, and hear me out on it, the Tasha Data scene has the con only because it is the foundation upon which other great things that come later have meaning. The Tasha hologram has more meaning because of that scene. The Data interaction with the Borg Queen in First Contact has more meaning because of that scene. Even though she comes out as Slave Leia and wait, Data, you jewel. Like, who talks like this? So weird. It's weird. It would have been better if Data was, if we knew who Data was at that time, and he was a little more just like naive and cold, as opposed, because he was kind of playing it like yowza yowza, which is not very Data. I think it could have been better, but look, it's a problematic scene because the security chief of the Enterprise gets excited that, well, first she goes, does she go wardrobe, going through Troy's wardrobe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You always wear pretty things.
Which also lie. Her outfits are garbage. Yes. Her outfits are what my dance teacher made us buy fabrics for our like recreation center dance costumes. They're ugly, horrible prints. So that in itself goes to the brig, the outfits. But that she gets horny for clothes because girls be shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And then puts on her sluttiest harem pants and gets super excited that the sentient android also has a buzz setting. Mm-hmm. It's, even though that is deeply problematic, that scene has so much resonance all the way through Picard.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I put that scene in the brig for similar reasons. I think there's a good mirror to it, right? Like two of my brick things are about the execution, not the actual thing.
Right.
And in this, it's that I think the execution of the scene could use some zhuzhing, for sure.
Zhuzhing. So what's the other brig that needs, what other execution goes to the brig?
Geordi, the wanting of sight. Geordi is a character who was born blind. He does not know what quote normal sight looks like. I want to be careful here because I'm an able-bodied person, but to me it does feel like there's a hint of ableism there, like the disability of this character being written as some, in some episodes, as a superpower because his vision is better. Like it's just a little inconsistent. And there's something in that scene with him and Tasha where I can see wanting what others have. I can see not wanting to be different, but the way that it was played, not by the actors, but like in the dialogue, it felt a little too much of, well, of course, blind people want eyesight. Like,
right.
And if you talk to most people with a disability that I've interacted with, or I see their content on all the socials, they're living their life. They're not going about, well, gee golly, if only I had this, that, or the other. Like, they are just trying to live their life in a society that does not accommodate them the way that our future in Star Trek does accommodate Geordi. So I thought the execution was just a little wonky for me.
And there's probably a difference, and again, also as not having a disability myself, I, at least a physical one, I would assume there is a difference between someone like Geordi, who has always been blind, and maybe someone who lost their sight at some point along the way. Mm-hmm. That they might have a different interaction towards the, you know, wishing to have it. Someone who never had it may not wish for something they have no concept of what it is. So why would they wish for it? They are who they are. This is their life, versus someone who knows and now doesn't have it. And they might feel, some people who have that situation might feel it as a loss. Mm-hmm. And again, to me, it's another scene that could be done great later in the series, after Geordi has saved the ship so many times with his vision and his extraordinary abilities to only learn that there is a piece of him that only comes out when he's intoxicated by this thing.
Yeah.
That might want to give it all away to, you know, like his scene in Insurrection, which I think was done nicely.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like you were talking about with Tasha and Data, like the scene does plant some stuff that pays off really well later, although certainly right. not planned. It's definitely like the execution of it. Like in the Tasha and Data stuff, like her traumatic past, I think there is probably something here about her discovering her own sexual identity that's her. Yeah, it is on her. Like it's not connected to her trauma in any way other than she is self-discovering. She's discovering her own agency. Although pushed a little bit by this virus, like the execution of those two scenes and the interactions with those characters is just a little wonky. 1987.
Right. I'm also going to send to the brig the entire Wesley piece of it goes to the brig. And even though, because this, I think, started the Wesley hatred, Wesley always saves the ship. And do I think he could have had an important part to play to show that he can, like, he can play with the adults and, like, have something helpful to do? Yes. Mm-hmm. But his ability to take over main engineering was extremely harmful to his character. Mm-hmm. It just set him up to be hated by the fandom of, like, we never liked... I can't think of any of the Star Treks, the genius kid, the kid who's, you know, like that's never a likable character for us. The, you know, Jake Sisko is a regular old kid. He's just a teenage boy.
So I think he and Nog are the only kids that are likable in the entire franchise.
I like Alexander because of his innocence. And Alexander as a juxtaposition to Worf,
yeah,
works for me. I know there's a lot of Alexander hate out there. I don't like older Alexander because then it's I just didn't like the older Alexander stuff on Deep Space Nine. But I do like
Horn for sure.
Yes, and the fact that they didn't address it at all in Picard is very strange, as everything was about parents and we didn't reference at all. Which honestly. One of my unanswered questions when Worf says, do not presume to know what I've sacrificed for this. Mm-hmm. That to me was like, uh-oh, Alexander's dead.
Yeah. Like I've said this in a couple of other spaces. If they had given Terry and the team two more episodes, two more, because we got four for a setup, four for a deepening, and then just two to wrap everything up. I think that could have given some more room for what's Worf's deal in the last few years. Because, like, if there was Alexander dying, it would have made that hit so much harder.
I mean, I'll always take more episodes of Picard season three, but I do think there were slow areas that could have been, like, we didn't need as much time with them on Metallus Prime. We could have done something there. I think 7 and 8 have a lot of dead air that could
go.
Yes. We could have made room for it, but I mean, threw it together because that sounds pejorative. They got it together very quickly. So the fact that we got what we got in the time allotted and the limited budget, and I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. I'm trying to think anything else I want to say about the episode. I mean, also having the con, if this is the episode you're going to do, if you're going to do Everyone Gets Horny and Wacky, the Beverly Picard episode is great. The scene is great.
That's in my con list as well. My having the con list.
Having the con, yes.
Yeah. It was playful. It was funny. You learned that there's something with these characters that we don't know yet. And it makes me want to know more about their backstory and what they know. And we'll get pieces of it throughout the series. Not enough, in my opinion. But it was just a lot of fun to see. Like, this is, I don't know that we saw any kind of flirtiness with Kirk and crew Well, no, we certainly did, but it wasn't as like it was
wasn't love.
Yeah, and it was usually weird writing. I'm thinking of
Rand.
There was an episode Rand, and there was an episode with a doctor who like insisted everybody call her Lauren or whatever her first name was. I'm like, what Captain, call me Lauren? Like, what is it? Made no sense, but. There, my point is that this gives us an opportunity to talk about command and relationships. You know, we'll see this happen in the lessons with Commander Darren.
Right.
We could play. There's a lot to play there that they ended up kind of just dropping, unfortunately.
Right. Yes. And the thing is, this episode could be, even though there are those, you know, memorable moments, you could really excise this entire episode from the entire series and not miss it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, you know. All right. Anything else you want to note, Con or Brig?
My last thing in the Brig, I'm going to zhuzh the hell out of. So it might be just a good segue, but there were too many stupid problems in this episode. Like we talked about Data, Geordi just leaving in sick bay, even though he was supposed to be quarantined. We talked about Data. One fragment in all of the space around this collapsing star. And I get that that's a production issue and the cost of the special effects, but that one fragment just going exactly where those two ships happen to be, no. And then, the cause of the virus was not there. And the chips, I'm going to judge the chips.
Oh, God.
How does your entire overly complicated, like, what does Picard say in I'm still getting used to this galaxy class. I'm still in awe of its size and complexity. And it just shuts down because of a few chips being pulled out of an open area of engineering. Like, no, we're gonna judge that for sure.
I assume they wanted to show more of Data's capabilities, because I don't think you saw any of his superhuman stuff in Farpoint
other than
lifting
Wesley. Yeah,
she knows he has strength, so they wanted to show that he had super abilities. But yeah. Yes, it was a stupid problem.
And it could have been part of the problem, but like not the only thing. But I'll save the other pieces of that for the zhuzhing.
Well, let's set phasers to zhuzh and move on to our zhuzh segment. So if you're just tuning in for the first time, this is the part of the show. This is the meat of the show where my guest and I both attempt to zhuzh, as in, you know, spruce up, fix up, give another pass at the episode to try to make it a little something more, maybe a little more palatable. I always like to keep in mind, you know, I try not to make something that's unproducible. I try to make something that's not too, like, you know, hindsight is 2020, or like, you know, like I try to place myself in the imagination of like, okay, I'm in season one of this show. And try to make something that could have been workable had they, you know, another voice in the room or some more time or maybe a little more money, or I think with this one, a lot more sensibility to how women are portrayed. I'm going to assume both Stanley and I have some changes on that, on that front. Yes. So as my guest, Stanley, I'm putting 5 minutes on the clock. You have 5 minutes to zhuzh the Naked Now. Let's hear it.
All right, here we go. So the first thing is we're gonna lean more into the medical mystery of it. This is gonna be at its heart a Beverly episode more than we got. Beverly is going to lock down the ship. The civilians are going to be locked away. The fact that there are kids on the ship will be addressed. It's a weird thing that it wasn't. But we're also going to up the stakes. So this virus, how is it different from the virus we knew before? Like, I want to make it not just a plot from the original series, transplanted to the next generation. So it's going to be a mutated version of that virus. We kind of got that, but I want more of it. The thing that kills people is not going to be just stupid acts. There will be some stupid acts, not realizing what your phaser was set on, stealing a shuttle and crashing it into a nacelle, that kind of thing, but not blowing out an airlock that, like, no matter how drunk you are, unless you have some suicidal ideation, you're not going to be doing that. But the virus is going to be mutated in my zhuzhing to eventually kill people. And so I'm going to add an ensign no name to the away team who gets it first and ends up giving it to Jordy and others later so that there's still time for them to get the cure. But the virus itself is going to kill people, not just some stupid acts. I am going to I'm going to fix the data of it all. How does this affect him? By showcasing Jordy's engineering prowess. So one thing that we'll get with Jordy is he's breaking in and out of certain quarantines. That's how he ends up giving it to Wesley, because Wesley should be locked away as still a child on this ship, even though he's a teenager. And then he's just bored and drunk, and he gives Data, in a scene with Data, there's something about do you want to experience what it's like to be drunk? And so I've been working on this program or something. I only have 5 minutes, but I would figure out a way to make it make sense, where he's like, well, I could upload a program to simulate what drunkenness is for you. And Data's like, sure, whatever. Similarly with Data and Tasha, I'm going to need your help with this one, I'm sure, but it needs the zhuzhing of consent. Like, there needs to be agency. There needs to be I'm glad that they gave Data the virus, even though it makes no sense, because otherwise it would have just been very predatory if he was just like, well, I guess I'll have sex with this clearly drunk woman. He will have this virus that he can't turn off for whatever reason at this point. And there's going to be more of yes, I do actually want this. It's not just the virus. The virus is the instigator, not the only cause. And I want Tasha to have some agency and exploration of her sexuality here. The engineer, I actually like this character. I like that in 1987, we have a woman chief engineer. She gets dumber as the episode goes along, and so I'm going to fix that. Completely taking out Wesley taking over engineering. He is going to have the repulsor beam idea, and the chief engineer is not going to be like, well, that'll take weeks of new circuitry. They'll figure it out together. So it gives Wesley an opportunity to play, but the chief is the one who's like, okay, let's make this happen. This is a great idea. What do you think about this? Your perspective on this is really interesting. And come up with some other problem that they solve together to make the repulsor work.
Right. You noted that they say the word circuit and circuitry too much in the first season.
What is this? And the control chips will be moved, and we'll still have Data do that as a critical part of something, but not. We're going to give him something to do that fixes something real, a bypassing the chips because somebody phasered them, not just pulled them out, or crashed a shuttle into an impulse engine. We need a real problem that isn't just a few isolinear chips puzzle piece kind of thing.
If the isolinear chips removal didn't happen, if it wasn't a matter of I took all the pieces out, oopsie, guess we can't do nothing. If it was, Wesley has this idea, she's like, that's real great and probably could work, and we would need, hours, hours to reconfigure that. And it's like, well, I can do it right now. And that's what Data's doing. He's reconfiguring and can do it faster. That works for me.
Yeah. And then at the same time, we get Beverly solving the crisis.
Solving the crisis. You know, I will also say I forgot to mention how stupid it is that they figure it out because somebody remembers the picture of someone frozen in a shower once.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of okay with it, but it is like the way that they get that's one of the places where there was some weird dialogue too, because Riker is like, "Captain, we figured it out." Like, no, you didn't. You remembered a time that something similar happened. It's just weird to, it was a bold claim on Riker's part. Like, well, we figured it out.
And it wasn't more likely that Beverly would find the pathogen and there would be some record of it in the system and that would lead them back. Because if you want to Easter egg TOS for whatever reason, even though there was this hard and fast rule of like, don't reference TOS. But if you wanted to reference TOS, it was fine to throw it in as like, it's similar to that. You know, here's some member berries, nerds. Like, it's similar to that virus. Move on.
And if, you know, if the zhuzhening of last week, I think I cut McCoy completely. But if we had a scene of McCoy and Crusher, how cool would it be in this episode? It's like, well, wait a minute. I was just talking to Dr. McCoy and he told me so many great stories about what was going on in his enterprise. And it reminded Beverly, and she's the one who looks up the enterprise records, like Dr. McCoy, who's literally just on this ship, fixed this problem before. Let's like build that connection.
Okay. I could see that. I could see that makes logical sense. And I think fans would like it, but I also could understand why the showrunners of Next Gen wouldn't like that, because it's like, oh, Beverly's only good because she, you know, relies on the better doctor from the last show. Like, they want to like make her, no, she's just good because she's good at her job. Like, she doesn't need McCoy to, I could see that as well. All right. So this is a medical mystery with less stupidity and less stupid obstacles and more consent.
Yes.
All right. So that brings me to my zhuzh. So we differ in our zhuzhes because you leaned into making it a Beverly story. And Beverly is, of course, my favorite character in all of Star Trek. However, I have made this a Tasha Data story. So
I like it.
I'm throwing out the reference to TOS, you know, the it can be similar because it's another disease makes crew do something, but it's similar to that in name only. That's all. So it's a similar type of story, but there's no explicit callback to TOS at all. It is not an intoxication virus. It is something that I'm basically making it less of a comedic sex romp and more into a psychosexual thriller and horror. Ooh. That it is making its victims extremely predatory and dangerous.
Bold for episode two.
Right, but hey, this was bold for episode two as well.
Yes, yes. Okay. Lean into the boldness. I got it.
Lean into the boldness. So the overarching story is about Tasha's trauma. So we get Tasha and Data hanging out in 10 Forward, and there's some sort of, they're observing Riker being Riker. Mm-hmm. And Data is asking Data-like questions about, you know, this courtship and what's going on and blah, blah, blah. And maybe something about him being the first officer and it's not technically against regs and blah, 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 blah. And Tasha's just visibly uncomfortable. She doesn't like it. She doesn't, you know, and Data just, you know, makes remarks like, well, obviously, you know, she is whoever this woman is obviously, you know, very interested as well and blah, blah, blah. And her, you know, she has comments about how, yeah, well, sometimes when you're a woman, you know, you have to, that's your only option, is to pretend that you do want the advances, because, you know, the whole thing about not everyone is in an equal power position to just be like, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. And it just makes her, and then she talks more about where she's from and her world and how things were. And, you know, she never really, you know, and Dana might inquire about, you know, well, what does that mean for you in terms of, you know, romance for yourself? And she doesn't see that as being a part of her life. That's not something that interests her. She's here to do her job. She's good at her job. She loves her job. That's what she's here to do. And Data makes some sort of reference about how he doesn't feel, because of who he is not capable to, you know, he is certainly able to provide, you know, physical affection and that sort of stuff, but he feels that it would be a waste or of the other person's time, because he's not, he has no emotions, and he feels like it would be wrong of him to even attempt to pursue something like that with someone, that he's not qualified or capable. So it's these two people who both kind of feel like they don't have anything to offer, or don't want to offer anything because of how they have come to be, mm-hmm. right? So now through this story, you've got, you know, you've got a vessel where everyone's dead. They go down and it's a horror show. People have been murdered. And they get very disturbing logs of these Starfleet officers acting very deranged and violent and primal. And it's like extremely disturbing. And so Tasha's, you know, trying to figure out what happened on this ship. And then things start happening on the Enterprise. You get, and we can go, you know, multiple gendered ways. We can go that a woman attacks a man, a woman attacks another woman, a man attacks another, you know, we don't have to play it the predatory man always after the innocent, helpless lady. We don't have to do that. But that there's predatory and rising to violent behavior starting to happen on the ship. And we basically just get down to the point where people are being, Beverly's trying to figure it out. We can even have a tense scene with someone trying to break into sick bay. You know, we can really like make this frightening, and having to quarantine and isolate people. That also gets all the kids locked away. Like, you know, as this more haunted house episode, you know, getting, you know, it's dangerous to walk through the corridors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Tasha's having all of these complicated feelings about it because it's like life on the Enterprise is suddenly turning into life on Turkana 4. Mm-hmm. And then when it's all solved, when Beverly figures it out, you know, Tasha's able to assist Beverly in some way to help her get what she needs in order to make an antidote or a cure or whatever. And through it, the only person who is not affected is Data. And towards the end, Tasha starts to come down with it. And he does not. He does a Tom Paris B'Elanna Pon Farr moment.
Nice.
Where it's, you are not in your right mind, you know, no. And she starts, you know, it's not a sex fire episode, but it starts that way. And then she starts becoming like violent because that's what it goes to for everybody who has the virus, whatever. He has to very kindly incapacitate her. She wakes up, she's cured because Beverly got what she needed from her and everything's done. And there's a nice little moment maybe of the two of them where Tasha says something to the effect of, you know, Data, I've been with you. You know, what you've done through these last several days, you are very capable of being affectionate with someone. And you know, in my estimation, you're very, and maybe we just leave it as like a, maybe something does start here between the two of them.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Horror is not my genre, so I'll probably never
me either
in that direction, but I like it. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about the episode Genesis that Gates McFadden directed.
I was thinking of that as well. Yes.
Yeah. Those elements, like, it was just the right amount of horror for me. And
you know, the thing that I like that episode, but I do understand that it's like Barclay would not have spider DNA. Like, that's just not science. This is not possible.
Yeah. I know it's not the goal to judge the entire series.
Right.
When we get to that episode, yeah, there's going to be some kind of explanation of how random animal DNA got into different people.
For sure. Right. Yeah, but if you're going to make it about sort of people behaving badly and sexual, and you've got this character of Tasha Yar, who we know grew up on a planet where she talks quite often in the little time she's on the show about how she had to hide from rape gangs. To me, that's where the story is that Tasha has escaped that world and is now in the beautiful world of the Federation that she just defended with her whole heart that got her frozen in the last episode. And now she's watching the ship, her paradise, turn into a Tarkana 4-like place.
Yeah, there's a lot of drama and tension there, absolutely.
Yeah, and then of course you need someone other than two cis males to be in the writer's room to make sure the female point of view is cared for. But that would be my pitch to a more representative writer's room to flesh out.
Yeah, I like it.
All right, so I'm liking that we are always leaning, as two good gay men should, we're always leaning hard into the female characters and making sure they get a little more to do. All right, well, next week, I will be on my lonesome because no one in the world would ever offer to tackle Code of Honor. So I will be doing that by myself. And if the show is not canceled after me even discussing that horrible episode, you can join us later where Stanley will rejoin me for The Last Outpost. But until then, Stanley, where can people find you on the internet?
I am at OnlyStans85 on most of the socials.
You're careful now with that after last episode.
Yes.
Most. And of course, you can find the Observation Lounge, which is the parent content hub for Star Trek Generations Bad Takes, where I mock some internet troll's bad take on Star Trek in a way that amuses me and hopefully someone else. the Etsy shop of all of the Etsy.com/shop/ necessary outlet, where you can buy a McDougal 4.5-inch Playmates custom figure, an Argyle figure, a frozen Tasha. All of those great. I really fleshed out my season ones to start. But I think McDougal's the only one from Naked Now that I've done. You can, but all of that is through the Observation Lounge, and you can find that on YouTube at the Observation Lounge, or you can find me on all the socials at OBS Obs Lounge ST for Star Trek. So until next week, when I tackle probably the most racist episode of all of Star Trek, buckle up. You can get the hell off my bridge.